Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting.
Good morning. It's Tuesday, October 16th, and this is Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Neil Stavem. Great to have you along today. Peter Kapner is out this week. I'm happy to be filling in, and we're looking forward to a great day ahead. Certainly good conversations coming up on the program today. Tommy Binion will join us shortly from the Daily Signal. We'll review some of the news of the day. We also have Hugh Welshel from the Institute for Faith, Work, and Economics. So we'll put our thinking caps on. David Stevens will join us as a regular contributor here to the morning show, as well as Jay Richards. We're going to talk about the human advantage, the future of American work in an age of smart machines. All right, so one of the we've had challenges in our world from time to time. One of them happened in 1962. On this date, the Cuban Missile Crisis began when aides to President Kennedy informed him that reconnaissance photos indicated the presence of missile bases in Cuba. That was a unsettling time in 1962. Some of you remember that vividly. Today we want to take care of a little bit of old business. I forgot to mention yesterday, the 15th, was the birthday of Johnny Tata. Johnny turns, 69, been in that wheelchair for over 50 years. And she has a great ministry called Wheels to the World, and they're out during the month of October traveling around the globe. So think about it. Just remember the impact of Johnny Tata and pray for the outreach Wheels to the World as they send teams out, provide wheelchairs, walkers, canes, prosthetics, all sorts of things to disabled people around the globe, of which there is a huge number. So happy birthday to Johnny Tata. A thought from Johnny. She said, one of the most wonderful things about knowing God is that there's always so much more to know, so much more to discover. Just when we least expect it, he intrudes into our neat and tidy notions about who he is and how he works. And hopefully during the day today, not just on the morning show, but throughout the day, we'll have an opportunity to maybe be surprised once again by how God works and reveals himself to us. So we'll talk news of the day in just a moment with Tommy Binion. Yesterday, we talked a little bit, started the day talking a little bit about hope. But today, we just have a word about love and a reminder that no matter what comes our way today, what you might be facing, what the obstacles are in the way, the challenges before you, to know that God's love is constant and steadfast, and you can count on it. So here's a good word about that, and stay tuned for Tommy Binion.
There's never been a moment I was not here.
I'm just a bill, yes, I'm only a bill, and I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to the Capitol.
All right,
city.
that's the walk-up music for Tommy Binion. Wow, who knew? Tommy with the Daily Signal from the Heritage Foundation is with us again, a regular part of the Faith Radio Morning Show. Tommy, good morning to you.
Good morning, and if you are a bill on Capitol Hill this morning, you are stuck until after the election. You're having a sad day.
Well, and
taking the blues.
Yeah, there's probably, sometimes not getting things passed through Congress is maybe not such a bad idea. We have time to think about it or get some more input. But so Congress is on, they're on break now for to get reelected, right?
Oh, that's right. Those of them that are going to be reelected, that's what they're doing. There's an awful lot of retirements this year. So, but it's all about the campaign this time of year. Maybe if you're sitting at home, you're your landline has been ringing off the hook about dinner time, and you're seeing those political commercials, and it's just one of those times of year that Washington makes you miserable for a few weeks.
It does. We resonate with your insights there. So there's what, about 30 seats that are really toss-ups, do you think? Is that, I mean, if we talk about the battle for the House, what's your sense on what might be happening here in a few weeks?
Well, so the score for this Congress, Republicans have 240 seats. Of course, they need 218 to maintain the majority. You could say there are 30 toss-up seats. There are, five or 10 that are almost certainly lost at this point for the Republicans, and the remaining are a pure toss-up. There are a lot of folks out there predicting a Democratic win in the House, and most people feel confident that the Republicans will maintain control of the Senate. But I want to breathe a little optimism into it for the Republican side of things. This is becoming a nationalized election. This is becoming less about local issues and campaign ads and ground games, and more about the national Democrats and their behavior during the Kavanaugh confirmation, more about President Trump and many of his accomplishments. And maybe there are a few folks out there who don't like the president and are voting on that basis. So more than most midterms, this is a national election.
It's interesting, just at least here, as I've been watching some of the ads on TV, that everybody seems to position themselves as a moderate in the middle, but paint their opponent as an extremist. Has that been kind of standard practice?
Yeah, I think that's right. It's interesting, though, because that is their tactic. They typically want to paint their opponent as an extremist. They want to appeal to independents and those in the middle. But midterms are really about turnout. And turnout comes from the base of the respective parties. If you turn out more of your base than the opponent turns out of his or her base, you've won the election. So there are a few who recognize this, and they're running to appeal to their base. They're running on issues that their base cares about. Now, the other thing is the difference between what you're going to run on and what the actual legislative agenda is going to be. Republicans, for instance, they're running on tax cuts and the strong economy. But tax cuts, they're already done. They may work on tax cuts 2.0 in the new year, but they're sort of running on what they accomplished in the past year. Democrats, of course, they're running on things like Medicare for All, which is not going to happen. It's not even clear that they're going to consider it in the House. Instead, I think if the Democrats take over the majority, they're going to focus on investigating the Trump administration, practicing oversight over the Trump administration, and potentially even impeachment of President Trump, or they're talking about impeachment of Justice Kavanaugh. So there's a little bit of what they're running on and then what people are actually sensing they're going to do. And of course, you would like those two things to be the same, but this is politics.
I'm wondering if the pollsters are using the same strategy they used when President Trump won the election, where there was almost unanimous assumption that Hillary was going to win. So can we have any confidence in the early polls at this point?
I have very low confidence, or at least I have a high dose of skepticism for what the polls are telling us. Of course, there was a huge swath of voters that the polls missed in 2016. Now, pollsters, they adjust. They have different turnout models, different excitement models, enthusiasm models for the different parties in midterms. And the other thing that's different is they're looking at much smaller populations of people. You know, a congressional district is only about 700,000 people. That's a lot easier to poll than a whole state or a whole country and have a closer to accurate result. So perhaps the polls are a little bit more accurate this cycle. I think that they're delayed. What's happening today, what happened yesterday, what happened last week, that isn't necessarily incorporated in the polls that we're reading this morning. So there is a bit of a delay. And even though there is that delay, Republicans are catching up hard and fast. There's a big jump in enthusiasm for Republicans. And, of course, the other thing that's going on here is that there is early voting opening in a bunch of states, already open in some states, opening this week in other states. And early voting is really hard to capture for pollsters. It's not just about that Election Day turnout.
And I guess, we like to think it goes without saying, but to vote in a midterm election, to vote any time, is really, it's not only a right, but it is really a responsibility. And we can't just emphasize it enough that your vote truly does count, especially in such these kind of midterm elections.
No, it can't be overstated. Your vote is your solemn responsibility. It is an expression of patriotism. And there's a certain romanticism about it. Going to the elementary school or the middle school early in the morning or on the way home from work or at your lunch break, standing in line, getting your ballot, getting that sticker, there is a certain amount of togetherness and unity and patriotism that comes along with that. I always look forward to doing that. I go vote early in the morning, sometime in the 6 o'clock hour at the elementary school behind my house, and I just love doing it. I know who I'm going to vote for. I could vote early, but I love voting on Election Day for that reason. And I bet you there's a lot of folks listening that have the same feeling. That's why so many of us still vote on Election Day, is there is that real visceral romantic connection to who you cast your ballot for. That's also, it lends a responsibility, the fact that we voters take that so seriously. That's why this sort of silliness of politics or the frustration or the antics make us so frustrated and disappointed in our government, is we take it seriously, we do our research, we hope that they keep our promises or the promises they made to us. This is a quintessential part of American politics, and it's a time to be celebrating that, and we've got an awful lot of mudslinging going on that brings it down a little bit.
Well, Tommy Binion with us today. He's never looked better than he's wearing when he wears that I voted sticker, and we're going to take a little break and come back, talk about some of the other stories in the news. Get to a little bit about interest rates, even talk a bit about the mob. All that's it's not what you think. No, it's all coming up here on Faith Radio Morning, 17 past the hour. You're listening to Faith Radio Mornings, 19 past the hour. Tommy Binion is my guest today. And Tommy, one of the big stories over the weekend, of course, is not only the release of Andrew Brunson, but the death of the Washington Post journalist. And I know a lot of people have been weighing in, and there's been some pressure on the president to do an investigation. In fact, he made a call yesterday to the Saudi president.
I just spoke with the king of Saudi Arabia, who denies any knowledge of what took place with regard to, as he said, his Saudi Arabian citizen.
We don't know all the details yet, Tommy, but it's going to be a story for some time, I think.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Saudi Arabia is ostensibly supposed to be an ally of the United States, and if this is true, and of course it looks like it is, there's a lot that we don't know. Potentially there's more that the administration knows than we know. Secretary of State Pompeo is in Saudi Arabia, I believe, at the moment, trying to ascertain the truth. The question of what happened is a big one, and then what follows on to that is the question of what will the response be. This is a very tricky moment for President Trump. I think it's, a heartbreaking story for the Washington Post, the family of the journalist, but it is also a geopolitically a very tough moment for President Trump to navigate, and it's made even more difficult by the situation is not black and white. The facts are not known at this point. So how he reacts to that, and especially if this is a story that sticks in the news and Americans stay interested in, it's going to be a tough one for President Trump to navigate, potentially one of the most difficult for him to navigate. Of course, we've seen how he deals with world leaders. He has a very unique style that was on display in his 60 Minutes interview Sunday night. He was challenged on his relationship with some dictators from around the world. But certainly how he reacts to this and how the United States responds to Saudi Arabia is a big, big question mark.
Well, there's plenty of dictators around the world to go around, and it seems like the president has, you know, it's always a question: do we take the word of a dictator, or even the king of Saudi Arabia, who is not known for kindness to his opponents?
I think that's absolutely right. One thing that we know about President Trump is no matter what, he's going to put Americans' interest first. He's been clear about that. The America First mantra is as powerful as Build the Wall was during the campaign. And truly, when he approaches these situations, he puts American interest first. Sometimes that's hard to do because it's a trade-off. Sometimes you've got to swallow some bitter pills to be able to do that. I don't know how this situation will play out. I do not know what the American response will be. I don't think the Trump administration knows right now what the American response will be. But I'm comforted by the fact that it will be an America first response.
The Dow reacted a bit yesterday to the uncertainty, and of course the interest rates have been going up, so there's a little bit of a change in the economy in the outlook.
Yeah, that's the markets they do go up and down. Interest rates rising are something that comes with a good economy. That's something we've got to keep in mind. When the economy is soaring the way it is, interest rates are going to go up. We're growing at 4%. President Obama told us 2% was the new normal. Clearly, that was a false prediction, and we're back to a situation where interest rates are going up. One effect of that is it's going to curtail growth in the economy, inflation that's too rapid, but it makes borrowing money more expensive. It makes borrowing money more expensive for everybody, not just folks who would buy a house or a car, but it makes the government's debt and deficit even more expensive. So the interest rates are certainly a part of this story. I think the market is it's down a little bit, but overall, over the past 2 years, it's still up big. And of course, if you look at the market, you know that the long-term return is much more important than the day-to-day ups and downs.
We've just got a minute or so left. One of the stories that doesn't get much coverage, it seems like, is the leftist mob rule impact. We're seeing a bit more of that happening, but we're not necessarily seeing more about it in the news.
Yeah, it's sort of a top-to-bottom exercise on the left. You have people like Hillary Clinton calling for incivility, which is very disturbing. And it was sort of threatening, where she said, well, we'll return to civility when we return to power. It's very concerning that the attitude on the left seems to be we will resist with everything we have, even if it's sort of angry mobs, leftist protesters getting in the face of conservative politicians, even being encouraged to do so by their leaders. And then all the way down to grassroots liberal activists staging really angry and upset protests. If this election is about sort of the personality of the two parties, I think that attitude is going to backfire. Political discourse and civil discourse, respectful debate about ideas is what Americans want from their politics, not violence and anger and insults. I just don't think that is what Americans want, and that is what we're seeing on the left.
Can I always find out what's going on in the news and get the great coverage and perspective at the Daily Signal, dailysignal.com. Tommy Binion with the Daily Signal is one of our regular contributors to Faith Radio Mornings. Tommy, I always love having you on and getting your insights. Glad to have you connected today.
Well, thanks very much for having me. Have a great show.
26 past the hour, and coming up in a moment, Ken Davis suggests maybe a spanking is in order. Well, I'm not sure if that's quite how it turns out, but listen to Ken Davis lighten up coming up in a minute. I hope today's a spanking-free day for you, either giving or receiving. It's 30 past the hour, halfway through this first hour of Faith Radio Mornings, and good conversation with Tommy Binion in these past few minutes. Coming up in the next 10 minutes, Hugh Welchel from the Institute for Faith, Work and Economics will join us, and we'll talk a little bit about Sears going into bankruptcy, the Dow, subprime mortgages, they're back. Aren't they? Imagine that. They want to say thank you, by the way, for those that support Faith Radio, ongoing monthly supporters. We're so grateful for your generous and consistent support, and we're always inviting you to consider how you can be involved in the ministry. You can engage with us via text now. You can call or text anytime, 877-933-2484. You can call or text and connect with us. Love to hear from you and many of you listening on the app. And, of course, there's now Alexa-enabled app listening as well. So you can look into that and find new ways to listen and tell your friends about it. Coming up in a moment, we're going to talk about how to measure truth. Jim Garlow has that report, and that'll be along in about 5 minutes. It's 25 minutes before the hour, and Faith Radio Morning's underway for a Tuesday. President Trump is promising the federal government will do everything it can to help people and communities recover from Hurricane Michael. Trump toured disaster areas in Florida Panhandle and Georgia yesterday. As cleanup continues, dozens of people are still missing. The storm is blamed for at least 19 deaths. Of course, terrible loss. Billy Graham Rapid Response Team is there on site, both in Georgia and in the Florida Panhandle. We talked yesterday here on Faith Radio Mornings with Josh Holland from the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association. He talked about the ministry opportunities that come from tragedies and the unique work the chaplains do.
I heard from a chaplain just yesterday. When we go into these sites, usually a host church will open up a gymnasium or somewhere, and our chaplains are sleeping on air mattresses and that kind of thing. But before this church got power, we sent a few chaplains in over the weekend, got a few rooms at a hotel in Albany, Georgia, and at breakfast the next day, they had their blue Billy Graham chaplain shirts on with our logo, and they were eating in the hotel lobby, the breakfast area. Almost everybody in that lobby were people from Albany that's homes had been affected, and someone asked, who's Billy Graham? And not to belabor the story, but just pretty much everyone from that little area circled up, and the gospel was shared, and someone, I think two people actually responded to the gospel. So it's just it's an amazing privilege when, not to take advantage of someone's time of pain, but in the midst of that, as people are open to spiritual things, just being able to share that God loves them, He's not forsaken them. It looks hopeless now, but God is for them.
Josh Holland from the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, the Rapid Response Team. Remember to pray for those chaplains on site as they do great work in ministry. And you can hear that full conversation. It was on yesterday's Faith Radio Mornings. If you go to myfaithradio.com and click on the Faith Radio Mornings show page, you can listen to that full conversation. All right, coming up in a moment, we'll talk about interest rates. We'll talk about the economy. We'll talk about bankruptcies, all those kinds of things. Hugh Welchel is with the Institute for Faith, Work, and Economics here on Faith Radio Mornings. We want to have honest conversations from a framework of faith that offer real hope. And that's one of the key things that Hugh does for us. And we're glad to have him back with us, and we'll get to that in just a minute.
Jesus spoke uncompromising truth in love. But for some people, truth is difficult to handle. This is Jim Garlow. In today's culture, numbers are too often the measure of a successful church. But we can't let that be the measurement for teaching truth. Teaching what God says is right and wrong will routinely offend many. Jesus' own disciples were offended, but they kept coming back to him to learn more. And many new crowds gathered around Jesus to hear his teachings after the others had left. If the church today is to make disciples, as well as converts, we'll have to change from our focus on numbers and re-embrace the qualitative ones that Jesus used. Churches should not primarily be judged on how many attend, but rather on how many move into truly biblical thinking in all the spheres of influence in present-day culture. This is Jim Garlow.
We're going to 21 minutes before the hour, top of the hour, and you're listening to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Neil Stavem, sitting in for Peter Kapsner. One of our regular friends that joins us here on Faith Radio Mornings is Hugh Welchel from the Institute for Faith, Work, and Economics. And so when we want to talk faith, work, and economics, Hugh's the guy that we go to. Hugh, good morning. Great to have you back with us.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
So let's talk a little bit about maybe start out with what's going on Wall Street. The Dow, of course, it's always been going up and down, but some concern about interest rates, and that could impact long-term budget concerns for the debt.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, obviously the market goes up and down, and we were always having small corrections. I mean, back in February, if you remember, everybody was all upset. They had the largest drop of the Dow ever. I think it went down 17, or I don't know, maybe it was over 1,000 points. I forget exactly how many points it was. But then within a couple of weeks, it was setting new highs again. So you get these corrections up and down, and all the people on Wall Street will tell you that you shouldn't be too worried about it. But I think the interest rates that's another interesting thing to talk about, and that's really kind of separate. They talk about that. We have got, the government, business, and consumers have all gotten kind of addicted to low interest rates because they've been low for so long. It's interesting. If you go back, I'm old enough to remember back in the 70s when house interest rates, I think they peaked out at almost 18 in the early 80s. And the average, if you look at the average since 1970, it really wasn't until 1990 that they dropped below into single digits, below to 10%. And, the last 10, 12 years, we've had unbelievably record-setting low interest rates. And we've kind of gotten used to that. And I think as we get to more of a normal economy, which is where we're headed, interest rates can't stay at zero or near zero for the prime and, 3% for house loans. I mean, it's going to have to go up to come a little bit more normal. But one of the problems is that during this period where the interest rates have been so low, the government has borrowed so much money that if interest rates start going up and they have to pay more interest on the debt, it's really going to put a crunch on not only the government's budget, but a lot of businesses, which have done the same thing, and I think, too, a lot of consumers that have done the same thing. And one of the things we have to do as Christians is we have to live kind of in this tension. We want to be good stewards with what God has given us. But at the same time, we don't want to get so wrapped up in our physical things that they become idols in our lives. And I think that's the real tension that we as Christians need to kind of step back and think, okay, are we borrowing money to buy things we really don't need? And sometimes even in my life, I look at that and I say, that's probably true. Because you think you need something, then you go buy it, and then you really realize, I probably didn't need that so much. But you probably bought it, and if you put it on a credit card, it makes it that much worse.
I don't know why it popped in my mind, that little saying about there, a little luxury, don't you cry, you'll be necessity by and by. I mean, the fact is we all expect and want more all the time, and I guess the government's maybe the leading. We shouldn't be surprised, I guess, that since we do it as individuals, the government does it as a entity as well, because our national debt just continues to climb significantly.
And one of the problems, I heard somebody say this the other day, and I think it's really true, you've got two cars, and they're both headed toward a cliff. One of them is driven by the Republicans, one of them is driven by the Democrats. The only difference is maybe the Democrats drive a little faster than Republicans. under both administrations, our debt has increased. And, at some point in time, we're going to have to pay the debt. And it's interesting. It's one of the problems, I think, with politicians. They have a tendency to kick the can down the road. And we say that, and we point fingers at them, but we do the same thing in our lives. So we're just as guilty as they are with our own personal finances often.
I guess we were thinking, or I guess the idea was that tax cuts will stimulate growth in the economy, which has happened significantly. So that will eventually bring about increased revenue. That hasn't really happened yet, though, has it?
Well, I think it will if we stay on this track. The problem is, do we have the will to stay on this track? Once again, I think the real problem, and you see this in the government, actually you see this in business today, And it's getting more and more true of consumers, is that no one takes the long view. Everyone's looking at, you know, in business, everybody's looking at that next quarter, the next quarterly returns. And it draws us into a kind of a short-term thinking, which is not really productive in the long haul. You see the government doing exactly the same thing. Everything is based on election cycles, just the next election cycle. And it's not really – and I think both sides are guilty about it. It's not really about – you know, what can we do that's good for the nation as much as what can we do to retain our power? And that's unfortunate. I'm not sure that's the way the founding fathers intended our government to be run.
Wasn't that kind of, I mean, isn't that one of the hallmarks of maturity, is being able to hold back on desire, right? Shouldn't that be a key characteristic of our lives, certainly as Christians, right? Being willing to delay gratification.
That's right. Prudence is a very biblical value, a biblical virtue, and it's one that I think as believers we need to learn how to practice, right? We need to be able to take the long haul. God takes the long view, and so should we.
So how do you define prudence? I mean, just that's a word we don't use a lot these days. What does it mean?
It's really using wisdom, and I would say biblical wisdom, over and over again over the long haul. I have a good friend years ago that talked about something he called the slight edge. He called it the slight edge theory. And he said, you know, the slight edge is doing the right things every day, even though it didn't look like they were causing, you know, having much impact. And he gave an example that I love and I use all the time. I grew up and I tell people I grew up in the South, but I grew up in South Florida, which is a little different. And there's a plant that some people brought in because they thought they were so pretty, and they're kind of they're called a water lily. They're called hyacinths. And these things have beautiful flowers on them, but they got out into the ponds and the lakes in Florida, and they just breed just incredibly. They'll cover whole lakes. But the interesting thing, if you put a hyacinth plant in a lake and watch it, you know, the first week it hardly grows at all, right? 2 weeks, it's maybe the size of a desktop. You know, if you look at 3 weeks, it's maybe the size of a mattress. By the time of a month, it's covered the whole pond, right? It's kind of the idea of compound interest. It's a perfect example of that. And one of the things about the slight edge theory is that, you know, that we have to do the right things, the things, and really from a biblical perspective, we have to do the things that God calls us to do over and over, day after day, even though when we do them, it doesn't look like it's really achieving very much, right? And what this guy said, you know, these things that we're called to do are easy to do. But the problem is the things that are easy to do are also easy not to do. So let's say, you know, we know that God wants us to study the scriptures, right? So let's say you get up one morning, you're late for work, and you don't do your Bible reading. And you say, oh, no big deal, it's just one day. But then it might become 2 days, then it becomes a week, and it becomes a month before you – you know, I mean, this is the way things. The things that are easy to do are also easy not to do. And the thing about the slight edge theory is if you do the things that are easy to do, they make a tremendous difference over the long haul. And that's really what prudence is about. It's about doing the right things over and over, while in the moment it may not seem like it's making a lot of difference. But understanding over the long haul, it'll make all the difference.
Yeah, I guess so. People getting up and get ready this morning, you could skip brushing your teeth today. It won't make a difference today, but it will long term. So,
absolutely.
Brush your teeth, wash your hands, hang on. We'll be back in a couple of minutes more with Hugh Welchel. We're going to talk about a couple other issues in the news as it relates to faith, work, and economics. Stay tuned. It's 10 to the hour. We're in the middle of a conversation with Hugh Welchel from the Institute for Faith, Work, and Economics, one of our regular contributors here in Faith Radio. I always appreciate the conversations of Hugh. We talked a little bit about prudence. It doesn't seem very prudent, but subprime mortgages are back. Hard to imagine. I mean, maybe just review what those are and why they're not a good idea.
Yeah, I've been kind of surprised as I've heard some of this stuff. Basically, what subprime mortgages are mortgages set up for people who can't afford mortgages. And that's a terrible thing to say, but there's some truth to it. And what's happened, the whole collapse of the subprime mortgage fiasco that really brought down you know, the stock market, brought down all sorts of financial institutions in the mid 2008, 2009, was really caused by people that set up these very quote affordable unquote mortgages to people who really couldn't afford to buy houses, and they got in trouble and the collapse. There was much more involved in it than that. Basically, part of the problem is that they took these bad high-risk mortgages and packaged them into instruments that then they sold on the financial market, and they did not disclose the how shaky these investments were, and that obviously compounded it. But if you begin to read, there, people are starting to do this again. And the people that are doing it say, no, we're doing it completely different now. And you know, we've got a really good track record. And, you know, and I hope that's true, because I think it's obviously owning a house is one of the vehicles in our culture today where you can begin to grow capital and increase your wealth, which is not a bad thing. It's interesting. I think Christians have a very flawed view of wealth creation. God wants us to create wealth. It's part of what he put us here to do. It's part of bringing about flourishing in his creation. And see, we argue at the Institute of Faith, Work, and Economics that the reason that God put us on the planet, you go back to Genesis 2:15, it says God put Adam in the garden to work it and take care of it. So we have this combined thing that we're supposed to do. Actually, Genesis 1:28 says it, you know, one of the reasons we were put here is to subdue the earth. And literally that word subdue in that context means to make the earth an incredible place to flourish. So a correct view of wealth creation is wrapped around that idea of flourishing. Now, unfortunately, we have corrupted the idea of wealth creation in so many different directions, whether it's the get rich kind of claim it the bad theology that we see in that's taught some places in the church, that God wants you just to be rich. Then the other side is that, you know, I've talked to people who've made a lot of money that almost feel guilty, and they feel like they have to give it all away because it's so bad. That's a bad view of wealth creation as well. So I think we really need to go back and begin to look at the Bible. In the Bible, there are plenty of examples of the righteous rich. Abraham was one of the righteous rich, and there are other examples in both the Old Testament and New Testament. Those are the people, if God's given us the ability to create wealth, we should do that. But then God wants us all to be good stewards of what he's given us. And sometimes that might mean buying a house and investing in that house and keeping it up well. Other times that may be to say, you know, this may not be the right time for us to buy a house, right? Maybe we need to save some more money. One of the problems with these loans is that most of them have no money down. And one of the arguments against them is therefore the people don't really have any skin in the game, so to speak. So it's really easy for them to walk away from those loans in the future if things go south, which is what happened in the last crisis.
I was just reading this morning Proverbs 21, but you're talking about Abraham, the righteous Abraham. He who pursues righteousness and love finds life, prosperity, and honor. I think sometimes if we put the pursuing righteousness and love ahead of prosperity, honor, and life, those things are going to come as side benefits as a result. And we kind of get that turned around sometimes.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And what we have to also realize is that, you know, you don't have to have a lot of money to flourish, right? One of the things, and I'm sure a lot of your readers can, I mean, your listeners can relate to this. If you've been on a mission trip, and I've been on mission trips to Mexico and to different places where these people have almost nothing, and then gone and worshiped with them, and they know something about worship that we in the West don't really understand. You know, here they are in a dirt floor hut, and they're worshiping God, and it just blows you away because they understand that they can flourish without all the financial trappings, something that we need to really understand in the church today. So it's not all about, you know, physical money and all those sort of things. Money's a tool that God's given us to do things to further his kingdom, and we need to understand that.
Hugh Welchel, helping us understand how God gives us resources to use for advancing his kingdom. He was with the Institute for Faith, Work, and Economics. Recommended stop for you to learn more. What's the website, Hugh? What's the best way to connect with you?
Best way to connect to us is on our website. We have a blog that we send out every other day to help kind of encourage people to really think about some of these aspects of their faith as they go to work. But it's www.tifwe.org. Tifwe.org.
Sounds great. Hugh, always good to have you on, and look forward to our next conversation down the road.
God bless.
All right. We're a couple minutes before the top of the hour, and we'll wrap up hour one, talk about what's coming up here as Faith Radio Mornings continue. Had a good conversation these past few minutes with Hugh Welchel, the Institute for Faith, Work, and Economics. TIFWE.org is the website. They're a great resource. Also, Tommy Binion keeping us up to date on what's going on in the news. Well, next hour, we're going to talk news as it relates to medical things. Christian Medical and Dental Association President Dr. David Stevens will join us. Hope that you can stick around for that. Jay Richards from The Stream has a new book called The Human Advantage, The Future of American Work in the Age of Smart Machines. He'll join us as well. Glad to have you tuned in this morning. And we also have Nicole Phillips will offer a kindness spot. That's all coming up here in just a few minutes, so stay tuned for more. Faith Radio Mornings here on Faith Radio.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.